Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I've got a lot of stuff to get into. I know people probably want to talk about the State of the Union. I'll talk about that. But sometimes I get into this bent. Like in December, the bent was the education system and what's been happening to our kids, and how parents need to really recognize that the education system, if you have a moral family, if you are Christian, you try to believe in moral values, those types of things, abstinence, you know, anything like that, then I've proven that they are making your kids your enemy because you're the one that's going to ruin everybody's good time. And so, and I talked about my witnessing and all of that, of actually seeing this actually playing out. Now, there are some families that are not necessarily as susceptible because they've had mechanisms, processes, whatever you want to call it, within their family that has kind of guarded them somewhat. But there are families that are completely, you know, taken aback by, wow, you know, I can't believe that my teenage children are hating me so much. And, you know, they hate, you know, what we stand for. And so the whole point of bringing all of that up, that whole bent, and you may want to listen to those December podcasts. They're up there on reclaimingtherepublic.org. But I've been kind of on this bent of how our culture has changed. And I'll actually make the assertion that the unconstitutionally changing of our government has laid the foundation of changing our culture today. It has been this huge process that, in some cases, some of these people may have thought that they were doing this with, you know, noble intent, that, you know, they were going to make a better government to serve us better. But within that betterment were nefarious intents, because instead of following the constitutional process that the framers put into place, they violated the Constitution. So, as you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And as you also know, this is really the only show that is, I'll even say, myopically focused in getting the federal government back into compliance to the Constitution. To do that, we need to get our states to hold them accountable. And then in doing that, we can get our states actually to become compliant to their Constitution. I can also tell you that many states need to revisit their Constitution because most of them aren't in compliance to the U.S. Constitution, and most of them have, I'll just say, we've got a mess to clean up, but that mess in each of these states is not a fatal mess. These states will not, you know, fall and crush our liberties and freedoms, and they'll be gone for good. That is why the urgency, the exigencies have been placed upon the U.S. Constitution and our general government, or the federal government, because they, when they fall, they will destroy our liberties because of that sacred, I'll call it a sacred document, the U.S. Constitution and our founding documents. So let me kind of move forward. There are lots of things to cover. So I'm even going to, you know, again, brush over the groveling. We need your support. Financially, you can go to the GoFundMe and throw some love towards us on our Reclaiming the Republic campaign. Or you can send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you can actually get involved. Send me an email. I can help you kind of, we'll talk and figure out, you know, how we can get you going in leading in your state. Now is the time to lead. If you believe you're a leader, now's the time to stand up and let's get leading. Another way you can get involved is you can get involved with Keith Broders and his organization, the Constitution Club, and get involved in sending letters to many good red state legislators that need to start hearing from people about rescinding the 17th Amendment and so forth. And I'm actually appalled at some of these dark red states and some of the legislation that they're throwing out because of all of these rhinos. I believe the Republican Party has to do a wake up. We'll talk about this more down the road of what that wake up is and what has to be done. And you have to demand this because it's your party. It's like, you know, your public servants. Well, your public servants are relying upon your party. And if you're sitting on your laurels thinking, well, we've been doing really good, I'm telling you, we've not been doing really good. We are so close to communism. And all these organizations that have told us that they're protecting us from communism have been failing us. It is time, if we are going to stop this slide, now is the time to do it. So let me kind of jump forward into my obligatory, because I did scan the news today. There is no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles or responsibilities or powers. What that means is you and I are going to have to do this. We have no other choice. It is literally, you know, do or die type of thing. And when I say die, the death that we're talking about is our liberties and our individual sovereignty, which is really, really important. Now, there's lots to talk about the State of the Union, all the speculation, all of the fallout, everything else. I'll just repeat what I've said. The federal government has a constitutional responsibility to protect our borders, our sovereignty, and our culture. And you have to understand that our culture is one of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and the evidence is overwhelming. I'm actually going to get into some of the evidence today. The most thing you have to understand, the biggest thing, the most important thing, it's paramount, is that you need to look at these people coming here, these millions of people that have come here that have failed to assimilate, they're not going to assimilate, because they don't care. They believe in the entitlement. That's what they believe. They don't believe in individual liberty. They believe that they're entitled. And that is destroying our culture of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And the government's responsibility is to protect that. Because once we lose our culture, we lose the foundation underneath it, which is those documents, because nobody's going to see the need. Well, why do we need that? When we, you know, what we need is the state to, you know, make sure we got food on our table and a roof over our head. No. They also have a responsibility to provide for the common defense and general welfare. And what that means, not welfare and handing out entitlement states, but to ensure that the states are equally protected, not just the border states. And I've said this, I would love to see interior states, red states, actually charging some of these blue state politicians. Jerry Brown should be called for treason by allowing and handing over citizenship and accesses to voting and so forth for these illegal aliens. Any politician that was involved in allowing that and not having a staunch protection to our system, that's treason. That's giving aid and comfort to the enemy, and I'll get into that in just a second. But clearly, the United States is responsible for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and that is in Article 1, to protect us from invasion. And in the ratification debates, it was clear that that was the guarding force. They did not want a standing army. The reason the militia was in, the contention over the militia, and I'm going to get into this, I promise you, the contention over the militia was maintaining state control over it. They didn't want the, because they considered that the federal government had the powers over the militia. It was almost the same as a standing army. And they looked at that as the path, a quick pathway to tyranny. And so the federal government deliberately, after the framers were dying off, they deliberately started to marginalize and minimize. We actually fought a war with the militia with the 1812 war. They didn't have a standing army to do that. I mean, they used federal money and used some federal forces, but the militia was really the heart of the 1812 war. And so you have to understand that the Constitution was very clearly defined that it was the militia that's responsible for protecting us for invasions. And Article 1 is a mandate that the federal government is responsible for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. They also guarantee to protect each state from invasion by using the militia. I'd love to see some interior governors that are recognizing illegal aliens that are coming in saying we're being invaded because of these stupid border states and their crappy policies, and they're violating the Constitution. We need to call the militia out and literally put up border checks and start sweeping our state to find out who all these illegals are to get rid of them. I'd love to see that. Wouldn't that be great? In addition, Trump, and or I should say the government, is supposed to ensure that no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort, and here's the kicker, to the enemies thereof. These people who are invading and they're giving aid and comfort, they shouldn't be senators. By this rule alone, Trump has the power to literally not, well, because he's supposed to enforce the law, he has the power to identify these people that should not be sitting as senators and representatives in the government because of their actions in aiding and abetting the enemies of America. It's pretty simple. But we've never been down this path. And the problem is that the judiciary has way too many powers, and I'm going to get into that as well. That is something that is really the crux of, and I'm going to give you a real macro view of the changing of our culture by the unconstitutional changing and perversion of our constitutional government. But I can't do that as a hard break rolls through. You know, I have to take a break here real quick. So I'll just say this. If we do not demand the preservation of our Constitution, it will soon be gone for good. And with that, we will be right back after these promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
So just remember, as I've had many of these conversations with lots of people, I'm here to tell you that there is no statute of limitations in the Constitution that ties our hands in accepting a long period of violations or abuse. I'm tired of hearing constitutional professors, lawyers, and so forth. Well, we've been doing this for, 100 years, and so I don't care. It's a violation. We can prove it's a violation. We've been lied to. We've been duped. and we are taking back our Constitution, and you're going to have to live within the framework because we can prove this. And the state legislators have all the authority to do this. And I'm going to get into this as well, so because you have to understand what sovereignty, the word sovereignty means the ultimate say, the ultimate control, and is the ultimate power in whatever. You could be, as Mr. Iredell of North Carolina points out, that with a general power of attorney, you are the sovereign, that somebody has given you the legal power to be the sovereign over any and all affairs for that person. So you better be, that hopefully that person really knows, how your mettle and how good you are, because that makes and opens a door for abuse. Our framers knew not to create a government with that type of door wide open. So what they had to do was they had to create a government with all of these boundaries and defined powers and so forth. And so one of the things that we'll get into again is sovereignty and how important it is. But let me move on here, because I kind of have this flow. One of the things that was, I think, integral with the culture revolution of the 60s was popular music. Music became an integral thing as a matter of fact, Jonah Goldberg in Liberal Fascism talks about the necessity of tying together religion and the state so that people feel like they're a part of something bigger than just, somebody ruling over them. It's almost, like they feel like there's this spiritual and or this grand feeling. And he points out how the revolutions have literally adopted their own perversion of some form of religion. And this actually, it transcends just beyond communism. This has been very successful throughout Christendom as kings ascended to power and started coronating their religious leaders to help, bring the flock along so that they can go have wars against other religious leaders and kings and so forth. I mean, it's been abused and perverted in many ways in the history. Today's show isn't about that perspective. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to kind of show how we looked at religion with evangelical ministry. Music kind of took a role in that culture revolution. And I remember there's a song by Genesis that mentioned that the seven trumpets are playing sweet rock and roll. And at that point in time, in the late 60s, when that song was written, it seemed like the awakening was coming from popular music. And today, it seems like the new evangelical ministry of waking people up and trying to get a cultural change in effect, or at least a resistance moving in either way, has been through the entertainers, whether they be conservative and or liberal. And I've commonly referred to conservative entertainers is just the same thing as ministers standing up in front of their parishes, kind of like what I'm doing, because it's kind of like preaching. I'm using, what I'll call founding documents like scriptures to reinforce my arguments and so forth. And there are lots of conservative entertainers that are, applying this evangelical ministry type of thing in trying to lead people and motivate people. But I'm not too sure how many of them really have their arms around a tangible solution, because if you understand evangelical ministry, it was the beginning of the individual capitalism within the ministry as well. Supposedly it was this movement of, a truer form of religion, but actually it seemed to be that it was a path towards making more money and making a living off of religion, because prior to evangelical ministry, the way leaders were people that, it was a calling. They did the job, and they also had a job to literally support their family. John Adams's father was a cobbler, and he was also a minister and a leader for his ministry in his local community. And that's how life was. You didn't live off of your parishioners. You actually had a job, and you provided for your family. Everybody provided their own way. Well, evangelical ministry took off this opportunity of capitalism. I will tell you that there are a lot of evangelical conservative entertainers and or liberal entertainers that are, you know, the elitists that are making millions of dollars. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if they're not taking you in the path, I'm hoping that you will wake up and go, you know what? This is not a path of actually taking it. We've been on this path. There's some guys that have been around since the 80s, 90s. Are they really taking you on the path? Have they solved the problem? Do they have a tangible solution they can present it to you? This is what we need to do, and we can do this in a matter of months if you follow what we need to do. No, they don't. And so they're entertaining, and they, you know, are really quick with, you know, their analysis and their insights. Yeah, but the question is, and so because I've had problems getting other people to actually, you know, come on board with this because they're conservative entertainers, and getting on board with this, they're not going to make a lot of money. They're not going to make any money off of this. And they realize that this actually shuts down their ability to, you know, make money off of this ideological divide that we're facing in these last days. Or I should say, in this last warfare, this ideological warfare that we're facing. In reality, the deep state, it has been a long evolution of indoctrination, and our school system has been very integral in that, and it even started even before then. The deep state indoctrination even started from the court system, because I've told you, and if you remember, I had Douglas Gibbs on an interview once. And in his latest book, he points out the seven most dangerous people to our Constitution, and most of them were jurists, because they kept on self-aggrandizing themselves and elevating themselves to a greater role and power than what was really given to them and delegated to them. And so, as I get back to kind of the later, you know, in the 60s, 50s, and so forth, popular music was both a part of the awakening as well as a deep state conditioning tool. Because if you look, there were lots of, I'll call them pop music, you know, leaders that told us, you know, buck the state, you know, we got to be individuals, we got to think separately. And today, those exact same leaders are telling us we need to collectivize, we need to surrender to the government, to the state. The state is the solution. What? That flies in the face of everything they stood up for in the 70s, but I guess our 60s, we're not supposed to remember those things, right? So we are in the last throes, like I said, of an ideological war. And in a way, this is all tied to the heart of my message over the past week and over the course of this program. If you understand how our society has been manipulated into this very dark position that we're standing today, I have proven that our sovereigns in our government are the legislators, because we are a Republican form of government, and that the court's role is literally to determine whether the solution is in the law or the Constitution, or if it is not. They don't have the ability to legislate, and they've been legislating for years through their opinions, and they've been moving us down this path with this agenda in slowly and incrementally boiling the frog. Again, this self-aggrandizing of the court system by our legal club has basically got us convinced that they have the role, responsibility, and power to do whatever is necessary to get us over the finish line. This is the foundation of their lie or their facade, and they've been building this, like I said, since the early 1800s. One of the reasons why, and I'll say this now, one of the reasons why Madison didn't stop Marshall in some of the things he was saying in his opinions was because opinions had no weight. There was no such thing as precedence in the Constitution. There was no case law. It's either in the Constitution or not. And so every single one of Marshall's rulings were absolutely spot on and correct. If you deleted the entire opinion because it doesn't matter what his opinions are, what really matters is what the determination was. But his opinions were filled with lies. And down the road, when they knew that we were moved away from this concept of a hard, fast contract, oh, now it's just this living interpretation. And Marshall did say these things. And based on that, that means he set precedents that we should be able to do these things. And that's how they got us to start sliding. The court system was more instrumental in moving us and perverting our government and perverting our constitutional framework than anything else. So with that, as you can tell, I'm at a hard break. So when we come back, we're going to get into some more truths, and I'm going to actually give you some citations on jurisdictions and sovereignty and so forth so that you understand how we've been lied to and why we have this crisis currently today. So we will be right back after this. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Everybody gets the concept of we the people, but they have bought into the perversion of that concept as we are a democracy. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. The fact of the matter is, it was common knowledge for the framers that we the people were the fountain of power. More appropriately, we the people are the fountain of political power. That's why we created a republican form of government instead of a democracy. Because when we the people have to make every decision, we have to vote on everything, because that's what a democracy does, then it becomes mob rule. There's no way we're going to require a massive majority. But when it comes to our representatives, we can get them to basically lead and come up with, I'll use the term, political compromise to create the right decisions in congruence to or in harmony with the Constitution. Because if they're making laws that are in violation of the Constitution, then they're violating it. And so the only way we can come to the truth is through the ratification debates. You will not find the truth in the Constitution itself. That they've been able to pervert our government by using the Constitution. There is a conservative entertainer that claims his argument cannot be broken. All he needs is the Constitution. And I am telling you that we've had brilliant constitutional minds that have been able to pervert what those things mean. You have to have other supporting documentation. And the only, I mean, most people have used the Federalist Papers. That's because the Federalist Papers have been around for a long time because they were in print. The ratification debates were suppressed. They were deliberately suppressed because they're legally binding definitions to the Constitution. The Federalist Papers were just arguments in the newspaper. They echo the concepts and sentiments in the ratification debates, but they are not legally binding as a part of the contract, which lent to this movement away from a contract form of government to a living document form of government, which self-aggrandized the court again, because who is the document living for? Or I should say, where is that document living? It's living in the court based on their interpretation. Not that, and I'm telling you that you will not find in the first few jurisdictions, or I should say, not the jurisdictions, the Judiciary Acts. If you read the Judiciary Acts, they weren't to interpret. They're basically looking, does it exist in the Constitution or not? If it didn't exist in the Constitution, then it was something that was refuted. If it did, then it wasn't refuted. It was supported. But if there was a problem and it wasn't clear, their responsibility was to turn it to the legislatures to say, hey, we can't find this, but we don't believe that this, you know, is, you know, supporting the challenge. We believe that you need to provide clarity, because there were some things like a Republican form of government that did not have clarity. Congress was responsible for clarifying. That's why the first Judiciary Act had to lay the boundaries for the Supreme Court. They had to do certain things to make sure that people understood, and there were lots of things that they never defined. And like I said, the guarantee clause of Article 4, Section 4, was never clearly defined. What does that mean, that they guarantee a Republican form of government? They failed to define that, and it's still not defined to this day. And that's one of the reasons why we have so many problems with state governments and why state governments are not Republican in form. Every state government is Democratic in form. So let me get into some of these statements, because this is really important. When you read the statement defining the jurisdiction of the court as Virginia was debating the compact, you will clearly see right here with, I don't want Mr. Nichols, what I want is John Marshall. And he talked about jurisdiction. He says, these, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction to which he, the anti-federalist, objected. And he said, with a few exceptions, let us examine each of these with the supposition that the same impartiality will be observed there as in other courts, and then see if any mischief will result from them. And this is John Marshall again, the guy that actually used mischief once he became the Chief Justice. With respect to its cognizance in all cases under the Constitution and laws of the United States, he says that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states, there is no case but what this will extend to. Has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? And then I'll editorialize and say, no, it does not. Does he understand it so? Can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between the citizens of the states? Of course not, because it's not an enumerated power. Can they go beyond the delegated powers is what he's basically leading to, and that's what he says here. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make a law not warranted by the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution. So in other words, if Congress makes laws that are not enumerated, like creating powers of regulating energy, making the EPA, making the Common Core a mandate, anything with education, anything with healthcare, anything on abortion, those things are not enumerated in the Constitution. And so he says it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. So what the heck happened? He, as a jurist, started self-aggrandizing. He must have forgot everything he said here. But everything he said here is legally binding. The self-aggrandizing in the court is not. And that is how they perverted our Constitution and how they started claiming jurisdiction over all of these things that they have no jurisdiction on. And so in the constitutional debates, they also debated sovereignty. And you have to understand that the sovereigns are the ones that are supposed to have the ultimate say. The courts are not the sovereigns. The people are. Ultimately, the people are the fountain of political power, as I've said. Madison has said this. This was common knowledge. And so when we create a government, who did we create as the sovereigns within our government? It was not the courts. The courts were to determine whether the challenge to the law was within the law or outside of the law. And so if it was within the law, then it was refuted. The challenge was refuted. But if it was within the law and they, you know, had their footing, then it was supported. And so the sovereigns weren't the courts. The courts only decided whether it was in the law or not. If there was a problem with the law, then the court was responsible because they have no legislative power. The Constitution clearly gave the sovereigns, the Congress, which are the two legislative bodies, all the power necessary. And so this is why it's important. And one of the best examples is Mr. Wilson. And he says, the secret is now disclosed. And this is in the Pennsylvania ratification debates. And he says, the secret is now disclosed. And it is discovered to be a dread that the boasted state sovereignties will, under the system, be disrobed of part of their power. Before I go into the examination of this point, let me ask one important question. Upon what principle is it contended that the sovereign power resides in the state governments? The honorable gentleman has said truly that there can be no subordinate sovereignty. Now, if there cannot, my position is that the sovereignty resides in the people, because in a Republican, and I'm editorializing right now, in a Republican form of government, we have representatives that we delegate to them. If they fail us, we have the absolute power and ability to recall them and or vote them out. Jurists are lifetime appointments or what have you. They're appointments by other leaders or what have you. And they become problematic because they're not our representatives. But in a Republican form of government, the sovereignty is the representative. So I move on and with Mr. Wilson, and he says, they have not parted with it. They have only dispensed such portions of power as were conceived necessary for the public welfare. So that's why I've been telling you, we got these constitutions, both at the state and the U.S. What we have delegated to our state legislators is within that Constitution. In writing that Constitution, we've said, this is what we're empowering you to do. So you better start checking your state Constitution to see if your state actually has the power within it to dictate medical insurance, to dictate education, to dictate insurances. Are these just legislations, or were they things that were actually amended to the Because back in the 1800s, many constitutions didn't fathom healthcare and a lot of the things that we're dealing with today. And lots of ways they've made changes to your constitution politically expedient to help them serve you or enslave you. This constitution is going on, he says. This constitution stands upon this broad principle. I know very well, sir, that the people have hitherto been shut out of the federal government, but is not meant that they should not any longer be disposed of their rights. In order to recognize this leading principle, the proposed system sets out with a declaration that its existence depends on the supreme authority of the people alone. The people, as Madison points out, not the people, you know, as a single unit or a single entity, but the people of the states, so that their focus and representation of the states that they need within their states are being represented. We are not getting representatives in the court system. The lawyers are, and the globalists are, and the agenda drivers and managers are. The jurists are basically monkeys on a string, and the people that are really the sovereigns are our representatives. And so we have to start standing up, but I'm running out of time, and I don't want to have another close one like last break. So we'll be right back after this break. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. This show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Folks, I'm here to tell you that our framers were brilliant men, but they weren't that brilliant. There's no doubt in my mind that the divine hand of providence put us in a position to ensure that we had a guarantee of a Republican form of government. They understood republicanism, but I don't think they understood it in the magnitude of the multi-level and the tiering of this system, and it was absolutely brilliant. That's one of the reasons why they recognize the divine hand of providence. Bottom line, we have a republican form of government and not a government of judges like Israel had way back when Moses left them to themselves. And so bottom line, and I said this yesterday, this last slide of opening the door for sex education into our curriculum was the beginning of the last slide that is supposedly started by what we would say maybe good conservatives accepting a compromise and trying to address a problem when in fact they only made the problem worse and opened the floodgates in literally teaching children all sorts of things that were absolutely inappropriate and contrary to natural law and contrary to an enlightened society. This was the beginning of the debasement of America. Or actually, it started well before that. But this is where they literally had this huge push that took a clean, wholesome America into this perverted debasement of self-fulfillment and indolence and so forth. History is filled with noble people telling you about their noble ideas, but in the fine print is the nefarious truth. Even though they may seem like, and we may believe that they are noble, it all lends to a nefarious outcome. As we look at what has been playing out in these pushes to infanticide, the court is the culprit because they claimed unconstitutional jurisdiction a long time ago, and it opened the door when Marshall started opening these doors. That is literally the cause of why we now have judicial agendas moving out from the bench and into our law system when it is all unconstitutional, as I've just proven. They don't have any legislative powers and they're not sovereigns. Our constitutional framework was perverted shortly after John Quincy Adams left office. And I mean, really began, even though Marshall was laying the footings, unconstitutional footings in 1803 and 1806 and 1817 and 19 in all of his hallmark cases. By this time, when John Quincy Adams retired and was replaced by the first Democrat, Andrew Jackson, all the framers were either dead, out of politics, and in a position where they were going, okay, I don't see how this is going to cause a problem. Because still at that point in time, they didn't induce precedents. They hadn't induced this concept of case law. Well, if they've made this ruling, then we can make this assumption that we can do this as well. And that's how they got us sliding so fast as soon as the framers had died off to basically correct these problems as we were going in a variance or in a drift from the true course of the Constitution. The best mechanism in all of this literally is the ratification debates. If you want to understand what is constitutional, what these words mean, and how they define them, you cannot do this alone. Even with the Federalist Papers, it doesn't work. You have to read these ratification debates. Now, really quick, because I don't have a lot of time, I wanted to go and inject a couple of things. Cory Booker has violated the Constitution and he needs to be punished just like Feinstein did. And I think Kamala Harris was another one. I forget, but they were both punished. And I think either fined or sanctioned or censored or what have you, because they were applying religious tests for a federal court nominee, which was Kavanaugh. Well, Cory Booker's doing the exact same thing to Naomi Rao and asking if she thinks homosexuality is a sin. If you go through his questioning, he is using a religious test on her. And this is unacceptable. We have fallen prey to this baiting for years as we have been poking our proud chests out. And when one basically staunchly asserts and goes, I'm a proud Christian and I'm a staunch Christian, you know, you're only opening the door for them to start asking you questions. It doesn't matter. We have a protection of religious tests. Quit putting your religion into it. It's all about individual liberty and individual sovereignty. That's it. We have to start using the foundation of our government and not the foundation of our religion. It has no place in the federal government. And if you understand that, then, I think the windows of heaven have finally opened, because now you understand how we have become literally We've become the entree. We've become the main course for the progressives to devour, because we have allowed them, by our own assertions, by entering in our religion into politics, for them to pick us apart. And there's no business for us to do it or for them to do it. We have to start literally taking stands and substantially taking stands on the Constitution. Now, on the State of the Union, one note that I think is important, that Trump could and or should list all of the American citizens who have died because of the political positioning of the left and the right. I'm telling you that they have been playing politics for a long time, and the Republicans have failed to hold the line. The Republicans are all equally guilty because all of this is playing to voter blocks. And when you really look at it, when you break down the whole concept of playing to voter blocks, well, first off, it's the dark side of politics, and it's an unconstitutional one at that. The Constitution does not give politicians access to the public purse to give out services or goods, regardless of what demographic they belong in. It is an enumerated constitution, not a general constitution. And if the power is not enumerated, they cannot even put it on the table to say, healthcare, I want to promise everybody should have free health. It should be a given right. I mean, it is essential and it's necessary and proper for us to do this. No. The framers had that door shut a long time ago. If it is not an enumerated power, they have no business meddling with it, as George Nicholas said during the Virginia ratification debates. And in their doing this, in shutting this door, it's kept them from being able to pervert the Constitution, but it has been wholesale perversion ever since. And in doing this, with this perversion in mind, these secular progressives and even the Republicans, the establishments, and or I should say the progressive Republicans like Bush's and so and McCain, they've been violating the Constitution in promising the deliverance of goods. These are all unconstitutional services and goods, my friends. That it is just that plain and simple. What this means is America is your government. If you understand what's going on, I'm hoping that you and the rest of America can wake up, because this whole government is, like I said before, it's a facade, and this is all unconstitutional. And the selling in creating the entitlement state that we're going to give this, we can do this, we're the richest nation in the world, we should be able to, that we shouldn't even be the richest nation in the world. They should only have the necessary money to do the things that's necessary for them. The states are the ones that are supposed to have all the money and the power. And so bottom line, they've been selling us downriver in creating the entitlement state and the global entitlement state. So what this means, America, is your government has been unconstitutionally up for sale. And it's all been for sale to our detriment. The question I have for you is, what is it going to take? I'm hoping that good people like you finally make the decision this year to take a stand. Let 2019 be that year. Let it be the pivotal point that you actually take back. You take the initiative. You take the effort. It all starts. The marathon isn't ran with, you know, the hours or minutes or what have you. A marathon is ran one step at a time. You have no idea if you're going to get hit by a car or a bird to take you out, or even a bomb by a terrorist. A marathon is ran one step at a time. And the first step in taking back our Constitution is taking that final stand and saying, enough. I've had enough. You can't do this anymore. So with a few other little things I could throw out there, because I've got barely a minute left, I think Congress, with this Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I'm bad with names, RBG, you know, her performance as a SCOTUS, as a Supreme Court justice, has been, you know, terrible. And Congress needs to redefine good behavior to include the ability to perform the job for SCOTUS. If you are infirm, if you're at a point because of your age and your ailments and everything else, you cannot be on the job, then you need to step down or we will remove you. And they need to redefine this. They need to take that initiative in holding a standard for what a Supreme Court justice really means. Now, I could talk about, literally, it's buried in the news, but there's a scientist that believes that there might be an alien spaceship that has come from the far corners of, you know, the universe, and it's been monitoring us and visiting us or what have you. And I'm going, okay, it's beginning, so We'll have to talk about that some other day. I'm out of here. I'm G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.